The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, there was traffic chaos in the heart of Dublin this week when around 100 tractors arrived to stage a protest once again about the price of beef. Our next guest thinks we should discourage anyone from going into animal husbandry. He's no stranger to controversy. His documentary Apocalypse Cow, which aired on Channel 4 recently, enraged some for declaring that the future of food will leave farming in the past. We caught up with the environmental and political activist George Monbiot earlier, and I asked him firstly to outline what he sees as the series of massive crises converging on farming.
One of those is climate breakdown, and there have been several papers published recently about what scientists call multiple breadbasket failures, some of the crucial grain-growing regions of the world being hit simultaneously by heat waves and droughts and other disruptions. At the same time, we are seeing water reserves running out. The great aquifers, which have fed irrigated crops to such effect, producing so much of our food, they are now running dry because of over-abstraction. We're seeing phosphate supplies running out. We're seeing pollinators disappearing because of all the pesticides which we've been pouring into the living world. And you put all that together, and it's really difficult to see how, under any circumstances, agriculture can continue to feed us, let alone feed 9 or 10 or 11 billion people, which we may well have by later in this century.
But is there a realistic alternative? You talk about lab-grown food, which in a sense is meat without the animals, and you deal with this in the documentary. Just tell me a bit about that.
So it needs a small amount of water, principally for electrolysis to make hydrogen, which is what the bacteria feed on, instead of using sunlight as plants do. And then you need a very small amount of mineral salts, much less than is used on crops per kilo of production. Carbon dioxide drawn from the air. It's using bacteria taken from the soil. It's using this handful of inputs, and it's producing at tremendous efficiency this food, which is immediately edible to humans, but that can then be used for a whole load of other purposes. So, for instance, you can produce the proteins which will be made into cultured meat. You can produce long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, which means that you can make cultured fish. And, you know, commercial fishing is the biggest impact on the marine ecosystem. It's causing cascading ecological collapse around the world. And it's quite easy to see how you can just massively take the pressure off the living planet while ensuring there's enough food for everyone, which is not the case at the moment.
What does it taste like?
Well, so I was the second person on Earth to eat a pancake made out of the microbial flour being produced in the laboratory we visited in Helsinki in Finland. The only person before me was one of the lab technicians, and it tasted just like a pancake. That was the extraordinary thing, the amazing, mind-blowing, earth-shattering thing was it was just like a normal pancake.
But that pancake that you ate, it hasn't been commercially proven yet, any of this. So in a sense, you probably ate the most expensive pancake that's ever been made.
Yeah, probably did, yes, because it's just at lab scale at the moment, and there's not they're not licensed to sell this commercially yet.
How far away do you think that is? First of all, you'd have to establish that there is a consumer market for it. Is there any evidence that people want this?
The evidence won't be there until it's there, I think. Like so many of the novel foods that we've adopted in the past 100 years, you think of the history of the beef burger. It was only invented in 1921. And it was this outlandish, ridiculous thing where people say, oh, God, I'm not eating that. And suddenly everybody's eating beef burgers. And you look at the protein bars and the energy drinks and things, not all of them good things. Some of them are really bad for our health, all the fizzy drinks that we take today, for instance. But, there's no question that people are ready to try something new. And, the key determinant, I think, is going to be price. This protein is likely to come out within a few years as a lot cheaper than the proteins that agriculture is making. But also, I think people will be attracted by the fact that it's likely to be a lot more environmentally friendly.
Will it be healthier? Because surely the food that we eat is more than simply the sum of the parts of the ingredients that have gone into it.
Well, we'll still need to grow fruit and vegetables. And in fact, we ought to be all eating a lot more fruit and vegetables than the average person does eat. And that will still need farming. But what this replaces is really the bulk commodities. And you know, most people, I don't think, are very aware of this vast global trade in wheat, in maize, in pork bellies, in lamb, in beef, huge, huge quantities. Chicken, of course, shipped around the world, providing bulk nutrition for people, but at enormous environmental cost and an enormous cost in animal suffering as well.
There might be health implications as well.
Well, of course.
And probably very little research on that.
Yeah, no, it all needs to be properly and thoroughly tested. But, you know, the current diet has massive health implications. The thing with cultured meat is that you can produce it with far fewer saturated fats. You can produce, you know, it's still meat because it'll come originally from animal stem cells, but it won't have been produced with any animal suffering. You can take out some of the bad components and you can start adding much better components. And you know, we have a pretty crude way of producing food at the moment. We take a few plant varieties, a few animal varieties, we breed them and breed them and breed them to maximize productivity. What we get out of the end of it isn't necessarily very good for us. In fact, a lot of it is really, really harmful for us.
From a business point of view, how might this play out? So let's say, for example, if you're right, if there is an unsustainability about the current model, technology is developed which presents a cheaper alternative. Let's say, for example, if you roll that out, somebody's going to develop the intellectual property and the patents.
Yeah.
That how will it be spread around the world equally? So, for example, will there be enough businesses to feed people in various parts of the world? And then also, would you not end up with a concentration of even smaller numbers of giant corporations that would control the global food industry?
This is a genuine danger. And we have to prevent that from happening. I mean, that's the way it's going anyway in the food market. You know, we're seeing this incredible power of a few companies who are basically controlling the trade in bulk commodities around the world. And I want to break that power, but there's a real danger that if we get this wrong, the new foods could reinforce that power. If the key technologies are patented and we don't have strong antitrust laws, you know, we could end up...
They could charge what they like. You'd imagine food should be cheaper and it
wouldn't be. Well, it's not so much that they would charge what they like. It's that they can mop up the whole market and, you know, it would still be probably a lot cheaper than food is today, but it would, you know, there wouldn't be much choice, there wouldn't be much competition. That's
how can that be prevented, though? Surely companies will patent
their inventions. It should
be prevented
by the means that all this stuff should be prevented, whether you're looking at the tech companies, whether you're looking at the distribution companies. You know, we're seeing monopolies forming everywhere because governments are in hock to corporate power and they're not introducing the strong antitrust laws we need. They've introduced far too much intellectual property. We should be rolling that back in all sectors. But, you know, this is a problem whether we go down the new food route or stick with the old food route. You know, we're seeing this real mopping up of the sector by big corporations.
But if you go down
we've got to stop that.
If you go down the new food route, what company is going to invest the multi-millions required to develop the new technology when at the end of it, they're not going to be allowed to patent their invention and get the benefits of it? It would be open to anybody. So why would they do it?
It's very interesting. Some of the key food technologies 110, 120 years ago were developed by the big corporations in Switzerland, such as Nestle and Knorr, without any patents at all, because Switzerland didn't enable those kinds of patents. And people just got in there first and they put money behind it and they pushed it and it worked.
What about the impact on jobs? You're looking at, if this transfer away from agriculture were to occur in the future, millions of people would lose their jobs.
Yes, well, in this respect, it is similar to what's going on in lots of other sectors.
Farming would be wiped out almost completely.
Most farming. I think the people who are most likely to survive would be the very small farmers integrated with local markets because, you know, there would be a premium, I think, on their produce. But yes, I mean, it would have very big impacts on farming. And, you know, we've got to recognise that. And my advice to governments is, you know, help farmers to get out gently instead of continuing to pour subsidies into propping up what is basically a dying industry. because otherwise the result could well be bankruptcy.
If you took a country like the United States, we're not even necessarily talking about Africa, if you take the US, you take the food industry, you take food producers as well as maybe a lot of hundreds of thousands of people in relatively low-skilled jobs in food production and processing, those jobs would go. You're into a scenario of, well, I mean, if those people cannot get replacement jobs, you're into a sort of social unrest with the level of unemployment that it would lead to.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it is much more efficient, you know, and it doesn't require people on a meat production line chopping up chicken carcasses and, you know, putting the breasts in one place and the legs in another and the rest of it. It is much more efficient than that. That's true. And so that does mean less labour will be required. And so, you know, that's another thing to get ahead of. And we've, you know, got to find and other means by which people can make their living before it happens, not after it happens. You know, and so often we don't anticipate these shifts. And so we leave people high and dry. But the question we've got to ask ourselves is, do we then say this shouldn't happen because it's going to be disruptive? And if it doesn't happen, then we could see something far more disruptive happening, which is food supplies running out, just not enough food to keep the world's people alive, which is actually, you know, far more likely to produce the riots that you're talking about and the total chaos and social collapse, which both of us want to avoid.
On the wider issue of the environment and climate change, you've been very critical of the super rich in terms of how they spend their money, how they live their lives, their lifestyles.
Mm. Well, we just cannot sustain the lives of the super rich. People whose carbon footprint equates to that of a small African town. You see billionaires going from one super home to another in their private jets and then getting on their massive yachts, you know, a yacht which, you know, will consume in 1 hour what 100 people in poorer nations will consume in 1 year. It's just selfish. It's unsustainable. It's an assault on the lives of other people. You're taking away something that other people need, which is a habitable climate. You're taking resources away from people in order to accumulate them yourself. You know, if they're eating bluefin tuna sushi and lining their yachts with mahogany, these are precious resources which cause massive ecological disruption and collapse. And that's just unsustainable. In fact, the whole model of capitalism in its current form, that we should all aspire to private luxury, it can't be sustained. There's simply not enough space. The system as currently conceived, which is dependent on perpetual economic growth, is a suicide mission. I mean, we can't carry on with perpetual growth on a finite planet. Eventually, we break through the environmental boundaries and we get collapse. And that's what's already happening. We can see Australia burning at the moment as a result of this. And that's with just 1 degree of global heating. And so the idea that we can just carry on doubling the size of the world economy every 24 years, which is what the trajectory that we're on, using more and more stuff, inventing more and more desires, because that's the only way you can keep growth going, is to sell people completely useless things once their needs have already been met. That's a step backwards. It's a step backwards over a cliff.
George Monbiot there, and we'll put up a full version of that interview on the website after the show.